Welcome back to Midpoint, friends. Today, January 7th, is less than a week away from the opening of the Florida legislative session. So as I always say, it is the most dangerous time of the year when Republican majority legislators come back to Tallahassee ready to do more violence to our liberty, justice, and happiness as Florida citizens. This year, when Governor DeSantis and his administration are lame ducks, is going to be very interesting. Will the legislature continue to follow DeSantis's path and support his agenda, or will they assert some independence and backbone now that his power has waned, as we saw with their investigation of the Hope Florida scandal last session? I'm your Midpoint host, Shelley Reback, and we will be paying close attention to all of that in the coming weeks. Today, in a few minutes, after a look at our news nuggets of the week, we will welcome our guests who are joining us from CAIR, that's C-A-I-R, the Council on American Islamic Relations, a civil rights advocacy organization that has been unilaterally declared by Ron DeSantis to be a terrorist organization. We are going to take a deep look at that claim and hear from those closest to the organization how that declaration has affected their mission. But first, the Florida News Nuggets. Let's start with immigration. With the 2026 legislative session starting next week, Democratic lawmakers have introduced proposals aimed at curbing the governor's emergency powers. The proposals are intended to draw attention to Governor Ron DeSantis's continued use of a 2023 emergency order that was issued in response to former President Joe Biden's immigration policies. The proposals now include a bill that would limit emergency orders of the governor to 1 year, with extensions requiring support from two-thirds of the legislature, and a resolution calling for an end to the 2023 emergency order. Another bill would create a state immigration enforcement action database. State Senator Lori Berman, who is the Senate minority leader, said, quote, "The governor has made a mockery of the emergency powers granted to him by the Florida Constitution. I think it's long past time for the Florida legislature to exercise our rights as a co-equal branch of government." Close quote. However, with Republicans still holding supermajorities in both houses of the Florida legislature, these measures appear to have little chance of passing during the upcoming legislative session. We all know the governor has used that emergency executive order to enrich his friends and cronies with hundreds of millions of dollars in no-bid contracts with our public money. This has been especially concerning with regard to the expenses of the Everglades Detention Center, known as Alligator Alcatraz. Speaking of Alligator Alcatraz, as you know from our past shows, the Miccosukee Tribe of Florida is a plaintiff in a lawsuit seeking to enjoin the continued use and development of Alligator Alcatraz on the grounds that there was no environmental impact study performed before the site was developed, and tons of concrete were poured, and 24-hour powerful security lights were installed, disrupting that ecosystem. The district court issued that injunction, but then the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals reversed and said Alligator Alcatraz could remain in service while the case moves toward trial. Then, as Mitch Perry reports in the Florida Phoenix, the tribe sought federal legislation to protect a small village called the Osceola Camp, and to add that village to a section of the Florida Everglades that the Miccosukee Native American tribe controls, so that the Department of the Interior would be required to protect the village from flooding. That federal bill, H.R. 504, the Miccosukee Reserved Area Amendments Act, was sponsored by South Florida Republican United States Rep. Carlos Jimenez, but last week it was vetoed by President Trump, who declared that the Miccosukee tribe, quote, has actively sought to obstruct reasonable immigration policies that the American people decisively voted for when I was elected, close quote from Trump. That was a reference to the fact that the Miccosukee tribe of Florida is part of the lawsuit filed with Friends of the Everglades against the state of Florida because Florida failed to follow federal environmental regulations in constructing that 3,000-bed facility. Of course, DeSantis then said that Trump was absolutely right about the Miccosukee tribe impeding Trump's immigration policies, while the tribe's chairman, Talbert Cypress, said in a written statement, quote, "The tribe has a constitutional duty to protect and defend the Everglades ecosystem, our traditional homelands. We never sought to obstruct the president's immigration agenda. Instead, we have taken action to ensure sufficient environmental due diligence is performed to protect federal restoration investments." He added that the tribe was, quote, "disappointed to learn that the White House vetoed a measure intended to mitigate restoration impacts on a tribal village." In an interesting twist, Politico reported on Monday that the United States House of Representatives will vote Thursday on whether to override two vetoes, one being of H.R. 504. That outlet reported that, quote, "senior House Republicans and Democrats generally expect the chamber will approve the overrides in a very rare rebuke of Trump. So we'll see if there's any life left in the moribund U.S. Congress and even an iota of political will to stand up to Trump." Next, a federal judge Tuesday ruled that Florida has violated the constitutional rights of people who were dropped from the Medicaid program in Florida because it sent notices to them that, quote, "border on the incomprehensible," according to United States District Judge Marsha Morales Howard in a 273-page ruling in a class action lawsuit. She also barred the state from terminating the benefits of people for financial eligibility reasons unless it provides adequate notices. If you or someone you know was dropped from Medicaid in the Medicaid massacre last year, this may be your chance to get back in, at least until the state provides adequate notice to you. And with the issue quickly moving through the House, a Florida Senate Republican on Tuesday filed a bill that would require all Florida private employers to use the federal E-Verify system to check the immigration status of new workers. I'm sure we will learn more about that bill soon, and we will cover it for you here on Midpoint. But now, it's time to turn our attention to another topic. As I said earlier, last month, Florida Governor DeSantis, always one step behind Governor Greg Abbott of Texas in the MAGA Olympics, signed an executive order declaring the Washington-based Council on American-Islamic Relations, one of the nation's largest Muslim advocacy and civil rights groups, to be a foreign terrorist organization. DeSantis appears to have followed Republican Governor Greg Abbott of Texas, who issued a similar declaration in November. CARE has sued Texas over the terrorist designation in federal court, and now they are suing DeSantis here in Florida. With me in the studio to discuss these events is Hiba Rahim, the interim executive director of CARE Florida, which is based right here in Tampa. So welcome, Hiba.
Good to be here, Shelley.
And we have one of the lawyers handling the Florida lawsuit here, Robert Sikta, a cooperating counsel in the lawsuit and an immigration lawyer, has come up from Sarasota to join us in the studio. So thanks for being here, Bob.
Good morning, Shelley.
And on the telephone with us from South Florida is Omar Sala. Omar is an attorney for the Council on American-Islamic Relations in Florida. I'm very happy you could join us too, Omar. Are you with us?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great. Okay, we have you too. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty of this lawsuit, why don't we find out more about the organization itself? So, Hiba, please tell us about CARE, why it exists and what it really does, which I'm presuming isn't terrorism.
Absolutely. CARE Florida is an American civil rights organization. It's a registered, federally registered 501c3. It's been operating in the state of Florida for almost 25 years. That's almost a quarter of a century of defending civil rights, upholding civil liberties, representing the people. People of all faiths have come through our doors. We do primarily focus on the Muslim community because there is no other group that focuses on the increasing cases that we see regularly through the door, particularly post 9/11. So we do focus on the Muslim community, but we open our doors to people of all faiths and backgrounds. And throughout the program, I'll share some examples of people we've helped.
Well, DeSantis announced his executive order in a post on X or Twitter, which I guess is how we get our government news these days. Like in Texas, the Florida executive order also applies to the Muslim Brotherhood, which was founded in Egypt almost a century ago. And that organization has a range of affiliated groups overseas. I want to point out that the Florida order says that CARE was, quote, founded by persons connected to the Muslim Brotherhood, close quote. And it ties the Muslim Brotherhood to Hamas, which attacked Israel on October 7th, 2023. And Hamas has been designated as a terrorist group by the United States government. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has suggested that similar actions, similar to this state executive order, at the federal level are, quote, in the works. But as of today, CARE has not been designated as a terrorist organization by the federal government, right?
No, it has not.
Yeah. So, Hiba, let me ask you, is CARE tied to the Muslim Brotherhood or to Hamas?
It's such a preposterous question to have to answer, but it's necessary, unfortunately. So before I answer, the answer is no, but let me just take our listeners through a little bit of a logical thought process. Historically, we have seen this playbook before. We have seen organizations, including civil rights organizations, be subject to attack by government who do not like what they're doing, who do not support it or want to silence them, want to isolate them, right? This is not the first time we see this happening in our history. There is an incredible amount of misinformation and disinformation out there. We know that. Our listeners, I'm sure, know that. So the question here is, what is the source of this allegation? If there were any kind of ties that connected CARE to any type of terrorism, then that would have already been established. We've been around for a quarter of a century almost here, CARE Florida specifically, CARE National even longer. So if these allegations had any merit, then our U.S. government, with its intelligence, would have certainly been able to make those types of connections. The reality is that CARE nationally was started by two Americans, one Palestinian American and one journalist from Minnesota, who was a white American who converted to Islam. Those were the two individuals who started CARE. They started it as a civil rights defense organization, recognizing the need for American Muslims to have a focus group similar to what the NAACP does for the African American community. And drawing that parallel, I'll go on to step further to say that just like CARE is under attack right now, the NAACP was historically under attack in the 1950s, and particularly one example in 1958 in Alabama. The Alabama government did exactly the same thing, attacking the NAACP, accusing them of terrorism, smearing their leaders, and trying to isolate them so that people would distance themselves and then they could shut them down.
So this is a playbook that we've seen before. And we've also heard from Trump that he wants to direct the fickle finger of fate of the federal government against civil rights advocacy groups writ large, not just against Muslim advocacy groups, but against, I imagine, the ACLU, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and all different kinds of advocacy groups that have basically challenged his policies and initiatives since he's been elected. So we know that this isn't the end. This isn't the end. This is perhaps the beginning. But let me ask you a little bit about what the organization actually does today that may have provoke this kind of response. And I'm not in any way suggesting that the organization is responsible for this type of an order. But what is the organization actually does that you think may have drawn the attention of DeSantis?
Yeah, that's a very legitimate question. So historically, we have earned the ire of some politicians just because people don't like to be opposed. People don't like when we call out their injustices. But those attacks have been at a different level. This is definitely elevated and heightened, and we believe strongly that it's because of CARE Florida heavily emphasizing DeSantis's Israel First policies. What does that mean? We believe as American Muslims in an America First policy, we should be taking care of our people. We should be defending the civil rights of our citizens. We should be keeping our money internal to support the people of Florida. Our governor was elected as governor of this state by the people of this state and went on to hold his first cabinet meeting in Jerusalem, not in Tallahassee, where he should have held his first cabinet meeting. We divest, we send hundreds of millions of dollars of Floridian taxpayer monies, and that goes to Israel in the form of bonds instead of supporting our citizens, our Florida citizens, who would definitely benefit our education system, people who are hungry, people who are lacking health care. We could reroute that to our people. But when, and then on top of that, when our Muslim community and ally community, not only the Muslim community, stand together and are raising these issues and highlighting these issues, and people are starting to open their eyes and see it because of independent journalism, because of social media, they're starting to change their minds. Public perception is shifting and it is sinking. And again, going back through history, the common response when your public perception is sinking is to find a boogeyman, is to start a smear campaign, is to heighten and elevate the disinformation. And that's what we are facing right now, is lies and misinformation, because, you know, he wants to isolate and scare people from associating with
us. So in terms of how CARE actually, serves its mission that you've just described, I know that there are some things that CARE has done or some actions that CARE has taken consistent with its mission, like support for the Students for Justice in Palestine group at USF, which was threatened with banishment or dissolution by the USF establishment. I'm not sure exactly who, but by USF. And CARE, I know, came out in support of that student organization. That's one thing that I'm familiar with. What is the status of that banishment order now? What?
Interestingly, that was Governor DeSantis also who tried to ban SJP, and CARE Florida filed a lawsuit to shut that down. And I'll let one of the attorneys here speak to that.
Omar, what's the status of that lawsuit, the SJP lawsuit?
Thank you. That lawsuit is not active. What the state ended up actually doing is saying that they did not move forward with any termination of the USF SJP.
And so there was no like deprivation of the rights of that student organization because they didn't actually get banned or dissolved, right?
They didn't, but had we not filed this lawsuit, I think they would have proceeded with it. So, you know, this is just like we're doing now. If nobody stands up and challenges these orders or attempts to squelch speech and association, well, they're going to keep doing it. But that's what happened with the SJP case. It's no longer active, but, you know, it is active is the SJP at USF.
Okay, well, that may have gotten under DeSantis's skin a little bit, that that it appeared that that the university wasn't cowed enough to dissolve the organization. But let's look at this Florida order by DeSantis, this executive order by DeSantis declaring that CARE is a terrorist organization. So unlike the Texas order, the Florida order does not appear to prohibit CARE, which has an office in Tampa, or the Muslim Brotherhood for that matter. It's interesting that he includes the Muslim Brotherhood in the organization, in the executive order with CARE to I think, place in the minds of people that there is an association, even though you've categorically denied that there's an association between CARE and the Muslim Brotherhood, other than a lot of Muslims, right?
Right.
Okay, so like the Texas order, the Florida order calls on state agencies to prevent CARE and anyone known to have, quote, provided material support or resources to them from receiving contracts, jobs, funds, or any public benefit or privilege from state agencies. This is very significant. Let's think about this. So anyone known to have provided material support or resources. Well, I think it's appropriate here for me to make full disclosure. That means me. Because in my personal capacity, having nothing to do with WMNF, I've made donations to CARE. So I guess I'd be ineligible from receiving any contracts, jobs, funds, or any public benefit or privilege from state agencies. So I guess it's a good thing I'm retired from my law practice and don't need my law license anymore, because a state license is a privilege under the law that I could be banned from for associating myself with CARE as a donor, simply as a donor. Fortunately, I don't have a state job or a contract or need my law license anymore. But any state business license or any license, a barber license, really might fall under this order, right, Omar?
That's correct. It's so many different categories and examples, and maybe some that even don't fall within it, but members of the community might think that they do and feel chilled to associate themselves with CARE, and that's the purpose.
Yeah.
To, you know, chill the speech and the association, even if it's not legal.
I mean, fundamentally, this order is designed to scare away CARE supporters and donors, right? Because we have to ask, how could DeSantis even, enforce this type of an order? I mean, without access to CARE's donor list, email list, membership list, he wouldn't know, who to fire from a state job, for example. And I know that he's recently made a statement, Omar, that he was glad that CARE sued him because now he believes that he will be able to compel the disclosure of your donor lists and membership lists and be able to search out those people. Didn't he make that statement recently, something to that effect?
He did, and that's what makes this just so much more disturbing, that he's weaponizing this executive order. And not only do we not believe that this is something that he'll be able to access, but also something that's not even productive to the cause of making Florida safe. And Ron DeSantis doesn't even know what CARE does and who we are. In fact, he wasn't too knowledgeable about us just a few years ago when his office issued a certificate for us for an interfaith designation that was then quickly revoked after somebody in his administration alerted him to that. So I don't really think he pays attention to the work that we do, other than listening to people in his administration who don't agree with us. And, that and the lawsuit against him. But
this looks like a very Trumpy kind of PR attack, you know, that allows him to claim that he's doing something consistent with with Florida state policy. I mean, he doesn't have any authority to declare an organization a terrorist organization, right? I mean, that's not within the state's authority. Who can talk about that? Heba or Omar?
I can speak to that as well.
Bob,
thank
go
you,
ahead.
Bob.
Immigration, civil rights, these are federal issues. That's what CARE is engaged in. And as Heba said, it's for more than just Muslims. I'm going to take a moment and give you some background on that, including my own. I'm sitting here as an immigration lawyer with CARE. I spent a lot of time in immigration court and at what's called the USCIS, mostly regarding asylum, citizenship, green cards. Prior to this, I am the senior pastor emeritus of the Congregational United Church of Christ in Bradenton, Florida. So you can call me Bob, or you can call me Reverend Dr. Sikta. And I'm working for a Muslim organization, because that's how it's characterized. It's characterized that way by DeSantis, because plainly, this is a person who still sees himself in the national mix. And the best way you stay there is to somehow stay in the headlines with stunts and smears. This is an attempt to smear CARE. I guarantee you, departing from that just for a moment, I guarantee you that if our major donors all made major donations to Ron DeSantis, we wouldn't be on any kind of list at all. We'd be on a plaque in his office with our pictures next to it.
And probably getting state contracts to provide some sort of enhancement to Alligator Alcatraz.
I can't imagine where we'd be involved in any of that, because remember, what we do, the things we do, are federal matters. They're not state issues.
Well,
we deal with federal agencies. We deal with federal organizations.
Well, I think it's the U.S. State Department, isn't it, Hiva,
yes,
that has the presumed authority to declare, identify terrorist organizations, right?
That's correct, Shelley. It is a U.S. State Department designation, and even for a U.S. federally recognized 501c3 to then change its status and be declared a terrorist organization would require for it to meet very stringent criteria, none of which CARE Florida meets, none of which CARE meets. And so, again, it's just fear tactics and ways, throwing out these big scary words to make people pause, to have them separate, and to create distance between CARE Florida and the rest of the community, whether that's the donor base or the community at large, including our ally community. But I am so happy and proud to say that the ally community, other civil rights groups and defenders of justice, interfaith groups as well, have stood up and taken an official position with us. They have defended us in a statement to Ron DeSantis. This includes organizations like State Voices Florida, the ACLU of Florida, the Florida Board Conference of the NAACP, the League of Women Voters Florida, and many others, over a dozen, who issued a statement asking DeSantis to rescind his executive order and highlighting the major flaws within it. Kind of going back to something you said earlier, Shelley, that this is an attack on civil rights. It's not just the Muslim community. And if they allowed for this to happen, then they would be next. And it's important for our listeners and the entire community to think that this is not just about, you know, we may disagree on policies. You may disagree on immigration or asylum. But you have to recognize as an American that these are constitutional rights that we are defending. And it's okay for us to disagree, but we cannot attack the core of our democracy, which is our Constitution. And that's what's happening now.
Well, you know, I recall from law school, it's Civil Procedure 101. The lawyers here with me probably recall the same thing. But you can't deprive anyone of a benefit or a right or even a privilege without some due process. And due process requires notice that you're going to be deprived of this and an opportunity to be heard before an impartial tribunal. I mean, CARE has gotten none of that due process in connection with this order, right, Omar?
I'm sorry to interrupt Omar, but you can try to chill it. Omar used a form of this word earlier, and he's spot on. Historically, you and I particularly know there's a thing called the chilling effect.
Right.
If you can lay that out on everybody and scare them away, then you've accomplished your goal. You don't need legislation. You don't need a court to approve you. You can just scare people away.
Right. But I think that's the fundamental basis of your current lawsuit, right, Omar?
That's one of the claims. The fundamental, you know, the primary claims are the First Amendment, claims, but there is also, yes, a 14th Amendment violation, lack of due process for that reason. I mean, why not? if they're so sure of what they're saying, provide some notice.
Yeah, but, I mean...
That wasn't there.
So you mentioned the First Amendment right of association. Violation of the right of free association is something that is reflected in the First Amendment. It's one of the things that the First Amendment is designed to protect individuals from government interference. Now, after Citizens United, of course, corporations and organizations are treated as individuals, as people. So the organization does have an associational right, I believe, under the law. But I recall that I think that, you know, some of the donors, like me, might have some associational claims, too, some First Amendment claims, because the thrust of the order is to deprive people of rights, state jobs, state contracts, that type of thing. So from my days as a civil rights attorney, I recall that there was some pretty good case law on against mandatory disclosure of your membership lists. I think the cases involved the Communist Party USA from the 1950s and 60s and claims of guilt by association. I remember there was a case called Robel out of the United States Supreme Court that struck a provision that made it illegal for a member of a communist organization to work in a defense facility without showing that that person posed an individualized threat, but based only on his association with communists. That seems to be like right up the alley of what this order is trying to do. It seems to be very similar to that, the type of legislation that was struck down by the Supreme Court in that Robel case. And I wonder if, you know, people have come forward to care and said, hey, I'm worried about my state job or I'm worried about my state contract as a result of this order. I'm wondering if that type of thing has come out yet. And of course, I don't want to invade your preparation for your lawsuit or your strategy, your legal strategy. But if there's anything that you can say about that, feel free.
Yeah, I mean, it's very spelled out in the complaint. And it's not just about the association claims, but under the First Amendment category, our rights to petition. It's something that CARE frequently does. We have a policy team that has a lot of issues that they address before the Florida legislature. We have a Muslim Capital Day scheduled for next month, and who knows what sort of, you know, how that's going to be portrayed.
Oh, to go to the legislature and petition the representatives there?
We do it every year.
Yeah.
As a large group, not just CARE.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, our speech, we're so out there in media, in our content, constantly talking about
Omar, I apologize for interrupting you, but it just occurred to me that in connection with this allegation that you are associated with Hamas, didn't CARE make a statement deploring the pogrom of October 7th, 2023 by Hamas against Israeli citizens? Wasn't there such a statement?
That's correct. From the national level to the chapters across the United States, CARE has historically taken a strong position against terrorism, including against the October 7th attacks. Those are all very well documented on our websites, on CARE National website, mm-hmm. under the resources. People are welcome to go. And it's not just after this court case that all this came out. As things happened historically, CARE has issued responses. And our responses are public and available for everyone to see. And we encourage people to fact check and to do their own research and to understand. We don't take lightly a terrorism accusation, and we don't tell people, oh, you should just ignore it. It's just, you know, fear mongering. It is fear mongering, but you're welcome to read up on your own and investigate on your own and ask questions, because that's, you know, we have the cerebral capacity to do that, to ask, to look. I mean, just our website is public. It's been public forever. Mm. So take a look and see what's on there.
So from an organizational perspective, at least, which is what this order is directed to, it's directed to the organization, but it encompasses people associated with the organization. I'm wondering, you know, what DeSantis can actually do to the organization, and has he actually taken any steps to deprive the organization of any state right or privilege or benefit, for example, like to lose your tax-exempt status? Omar?
No. We have not gone down that road, and, you know, we've had several meetings and gone through the different scenarios, and, you know, we'd expect to have at least a due process with regard to that. But no, right. We're still, our status is still active, and we're still going business as usual. But as Bob said, it's that chilling effect. It's the community members who are wondering what they should do or how they should deal with us from now on, not just the community members, but the mosques, the religious institutions that are nonprofits themselves that we're constantly acting as liaison between them and law enforcement or the community. Now they're wondering, how closely can we get to you? And our message to them is the same. Nothing's changed. We're actively litigating the case. And, of course, we're hoping that in short order, this should be locked. But, you know, until then, that's what we're letting the community know. We have not been shut down, and we're still open.
Well, one of the things, again, from my civil rights lawyer background, I'm thinking is, I would want, as a judge, to be shown some damage, some harm to the organization beyond just the chilling effect, which seems very, very clear, but yet difficult to establish as a matter of fact. So one of the things I wonder is, like, has he withdrawn any law enforcement protection from the organization's physical offices or from the mosques where Muslims, you know, congregate? And generally, like the sheriff's department, I imagine, you know, provides some security for that. Maybe you, and I don't want to invade your, you know, security protocols or anything like that. You don't have to disclose that. But I imagine that, you know, perhaps the mosques hire off-duty security, or even the sheriff's department saying, hey, we're going to have an event. There's going to be, you know, 150 people here, and we would like you to monitor it to make sure that we don't have any trouble, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Are we worried that the state is no, or its agencies are not going to provide that type of support going forward?
We haven't seen.
It hasn't happened. And if anything, we've gotten, you know, at least locally here, our local police has not acted adversely. We had a press conference recently, and they came in and provided security. So no, it's not something that we're experiencing now, but it's not something that we want to wait and see to happen before we can get declaratory relief.
Sure.
I will share this story the other day. And this is just such a silly story to share, but we were checking the mail at the office, and we get a page of the Quran that was wrapped in some bacon. And Muslims, we don't eat bacon. But we also we have no problem with the animal itself. We love all animals. And so there's no issue. So for us, it's really comical when we see something like that. I know it's meant to be very offensive, but it's like,
yeah, it's
like
offensive.
People think it's the kryptonite of Muslims, and we might just melt or something like
that. Like if you touch bacon,
yes.
You're going to melt, right?
Right, exactly. But yeah, it's meant to offend, and we recognize that it comes from a place of ignorance. But when we did call the police department to just have a record of incidents that happened, we weren't sure this for the first time if they were going to come out, but they did. Very, very helpful. It was a positive experience with the police department. But we are now suddenly facing considerations that we never had to think about before. And, you know, again, it our work continues business as usual, but we are pivoting now. Some of our time and efforts are going into damage control, into reassurance, into these considerations that we didn't have before. We have people who we regularly meet with, from officials, elected officials, to other positions who have responded to us and said, oh, you know, we have to check with our attorneys. So this is a new territory that we're stepping into, where people have to check with their attorneys to know whether or not they can continue that relationship or even just the conversation.
Wow, yeah.
By the same token, the SEMO spurs action in other directions. But paging back just for a moment, if you go down to near where I live in Sarasota and you go down Lockwood Ridge Boulevard, you're going to go past several Protestant churches, a large Catholic church, and a mosque. And on the days and times when they have services, the local police are out there helping simply because of traffic, not because of security, just wanting to keep things moving smoothly. I can't imagine anybody in the community where I live, anybody from any background whatsoever, being deprived of protection by law enforcement authorities to move traffic. These things get to points of just being absolutely absurd. But with all that in mind, there's so much history applied to all of this. This is such, as you mentioned in your opening remarks, such a repeat of what we've been through before. This is the Joe McCarthy communist era. This is the era of Martin Luther King and civil rights. This is all those things. This is passing laws that were called vagrancy laws in Norfolk, Virginia, so that anybody who was black and walked the streets after a particular hour was arrested for vagrancy, no matter what their circumstance was.
Sunset towns.
And it goes further back than this. This goes much further back. I'm going to give you a little personal family history. I have a great-grandfather who came over here from Germany by way of Italy. Why was that? Because he was a socialist in Germany who was opposed to the monarchy. That's what socialism meant in this community, just that they were opposed to a monarchy. So he went to Italy, and he did labor organizing in Italy. So Italy decided to arrest him as a vagrant and asked him to leave because they were coming under pressure from Germany. And when they did that, and he was taken to what's called the frontier, the Italian border, from which he came to the United States, he was given back all his money, which was several thousand dollars in American money in that time. He was quite well off because he'd come from a well-off family. He had to go through these same sorts of stunts involving people who are taken advantage of or portrayed in particular ways, either because of what they do or what their ethnicity is, what their personal background is. That is not what America is. It's certainly not what Florida is. We live here because we love this community. That's why we're in this.
Well, I appreciate that history, Bob. I want to, we have a caller who wants to join the conversation, so I'm going to bring in John from Lutz. Okay, John, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, thank you for taking my call. I just want to say I admire CARE deeply, and I'm with Indivisible Temple Terrace and also Tampa Bay for Palestine. Shout out to Sister Hibba. I admire your work greatly. I just want to ask, with the bombing and extradition killing of boaters and the attack and hostage taking in Caracas, the threat of invasion of Greenland, Cuba, Colombia, Mexico, would you consider the Trump administration a terrorist organization?
Okay. All right, John, thanks. Let me turn to our guests here. Thank you for calling in. Appreciate it. And if you have questions or comments you'd like to share, you can give us a call at 813-239-9663. Does anybody want to comment on that? I think that that's kind of a
Not only do I love the question, but consider this. CARE has many clients who are Venezuelans. We are helping them mostly on asylum. TPS has been taken away.
Right.
And they are calling us saying, where do I stand right now? What's going on? We have many clients who are Cubans.
Mm-hmm.
We represent a gay Cuban person, right?
Okay.
And we're helping them get asylum. They're asking us, where am I now?
Well, all right. Let me bring in Jack from Dover. Jack, you're on the air.
Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning.
Thank you for your topic this morning. I think it's important for someone to say two things. One, and this is a very important thing in my opinion, is that there is a mosque at West Point. Now, that's a military college for people that aren't familiar with the United States.
Right.
That, I think, should be at the top of everybody's mind before they accuse our president and his constituents of an American Inquisition against Hamas or against the Muslims, not against Hamas.
So wait, let me make sure I understand your point. So you're saying that because there is a mosque at West Point...
I said two things, Shelley. That's the first part.
Okay.
Before you make an accusation that our government is deliberately trying to separate the Muslim community from the rest of the Americans who enjoy the liberty of being allowed to pray to any god or no god. You can be an atheist in America.
Right.
But before you do that, what I highly recommend you do is take that first step and contact the religious leaders at West Point, request that they contact a person called an ombudsman. That ombudsman will get you in direct contact with the Navy flagship in Venezuela. And then get your facts straight. This is a war on drugs, on terrorism, and the Hamas is showing up. There's evidence, and that's what caused our president to move forward and say, we have had enough.
Okay. All right. I think I get your point, Jack. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate that. And Jack wants to claim that Hamas is somehow involved with the United States actions against Maduro and against the Venezuelan regime right now. Jack,
hold on.
Jack, I got to let you go, man, because we're close to the end of the show.
Just let me say one quick thing since you mentioned Mr. Maduro. I've requested from personal friends that they request a change of venue before they go to the grand jury.
Okay, Jack, we're not talking about Maduro now, so I'm going to cut you off. But thank you for your call. I appreciate it. You know, I don't know about that, but, you know, he's urging people to look into it. I suppose it couldn't hurt to look into that. I've certainly, as a news junkie, never heard anything about Hamas's relationship to what the United States is directing their efforts against in Venezuela. But I will say this, though. We have been talking about the motivation for DeSantis's order and the potential for the United States government to issue a similar type of order as being, you know, kind of Islamophobic, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like one of the callers did say, to separate the Muslim community from, or I think you said, Bob, to separate the Muslim community from the rest of Americans and very much otherize them. And, you know, as a counterpoint to that, though, I want to just point your attention to the election of Mamdani in New York, a Muslim, very open Muslim, who was just overwhelmingly elected as the mayor of New York by many people, even large portions of the Jewish community who supported his election. So, I mean, there's really this push and pull on the issue of Islamophobia in America right now, wouldn't you say?
I think so. And I think it's important to also think about this point that when people talk about this escalation into the federal spaces, I would invite the public to remember that CARE and CARE Florida have been invited to government spaces for decades. We have been involved in government spaces for decades. We just last year were granted May 2025 was designated Muslim American Heritage Month in both the Florida House and the Florida Senate, where we recognize the contributions of American Muslims. And CARE Florida was at the forefront of working with elected officials to make sure that that happened so that we can help our vision and mission promote the part of it that says to educate people on Islam and Muslims and create, you know, peace and understanding in the society. So
You think that'll happen next year?
We are filing for it.
Okay.
We have Representative Anna Eskamani who is willing to file, and we'll push forward. I mean, again, as Omar said, this is business as usual. We have been awarded proclamations and recognitions by the mayor, and as Omar alluded to earlier, even though it was then rescinded, we got a certificate of recognition from the governor's office. Mm. And the language was so interestingly specific. It was presented to CARE Florida for our involvement, quote, for our frontline service and commitment to the vulnerable populations of Florida. I mean, the irony there, right? Getting that from Governor DeSantis's office. And then it doesn't matter to me that it was later rescinded. Somebody.
Was it rescinded after this order, executive order?
No, before. But somebody recognized the work that we're doing, and somebody, you know, and all of these government officials that we meet with regularly recognize the work outside of civil rights, the local work that we do that have to do with local food pantries to address inequities, that have to do with back to school drives, interfaith work within the community, working with the sheriff's offices, public school systems. We work with all these systems in order to promote a healthy understanding of Islam and Muslims so that we can coexist peacefully. That's the work that CARE Florida does. And so we have these attacks coming at us, but gratefully, because we've been a part of the community for so long and people know who we are and recognize the value of our work, we are seeing the community stand up to support us. We are also seeing the Muslim community, while some of them are pausing, reconsidering, and asking questions, yes, we are definitely responding to community concerns, but we have seen some people pull back and we have seen other people stand taller.
Step forward.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Omar, let me ask you, what's the current status of this lawsuit? And if people want to find out more about it, where can they go to do that?
Well, the best place on our website, we have a press release with a copy of the complaint. The lawsuit is in progress. And stay tuned. We have not, you know, there are some steps forthcoming, and you'll be hearing about it. But at this point, we have a filed lawsuit against the governor. And at this point, we'll be seeking injunctive relief in short order to get that executive order blocked.
Injunctive relief, of course, means that that order could not be enforced if it's granted, right?
Right.
Okay. Where is the website where someone can look at the complaint and evaluate it for themselves? And the order, I assume.
Yes, so the website is at careflorida.org, and in our media, under our press tab, you will see a press release related to the lawsuit, and in there is a copy of the complaint. The executive order is quite Googleable. It's 25-244. So if anybody, if you search executive order or Florida executive order 25-244, that's where it pops up and you can view it.
Okay. I'm sorry that's all we have time for today, friends. I'm really grateful to my guests for coming in and talking to us about CARE and about the order and the lawsuit. I want to thank Hiba Rahim, Interim Executive Director of CARE Florida, Attorney Robert Sicht, and who's with both of whom are with us in the studio, and Attorney Omar Sala, who's called in from South Florida. Thanks to you all for being with us here at WMNF. And if people want to learn more about CARE generally, Hiba, tell us where they can go.
Again, our website is CARE Florida. CARE is spelled C-A-I-R, Florida.org. Our contact information is on there. People have been emailing us, and we love the emails coming through. Thank you, John, for your words of support earlier in the program. And thank you to everyone who's written. Whether we know you or not, we've received emails of people just standing in solidarity with us. And we appreciate that very much. It is so valuable to the organization and to the Muslim community to hear that. So just wanted to express my gratitude.
Okay,
there.
Thanks for that. And thanks also to Jessica Green on the soundboard for making sure we're on the air, and Barbara Fling on the phones for bringing our listeners into the conversation. Thanks to you all for listening in. Now stay tuned for Talking Animals next after the NPR news. I see that Duncan is back in the studio. I'm Shelley Reback, and we are WMNF Tampa. People wanna say, yeah.
from NPR.